Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Mark Packham. Joining me this evening, we've got Matt Cone-Stoled Knight.
Hello.
James the Snake Cross.
Hello.
And Joe Crippler Crossface Branton.
No, don't call him that.
It's a bit cold.
That's the worst one.
That is the worst one.
It would have made more sense for Jay to been back, because then it would have rhymed with the surname.
Crippler Crossface Cross.
Yeah, the Crippler. Yeah, anyway. Anyway, how's it going? We are in a very different locale this week. We're in Jay's living room instead of mine, which is why it probably sounds a bit airy, because it's a bit bigger. And you can hear the sea, because we can literally see the sea from here.
It's a well-located flat.
We've picked probably the best day of the whole year to be indoors and doing a podcast and doing some other Guitar Nerd stuff.
I was thinking, actually, I don't think we've ever all had a day off together.
Maybe not. We never, like today we've, and last night, we just sort of hung out a bit, haven't we?
Yeah.
We haven't done that for ages.
Maybe we should all go on holiday.
I found it really weird that we were in the same room last night and not talking about guitar stuff.
It was weird.
We did talk about quite a lot of guitar stuff.
But some of the time we weren't.
Some of the time we were talking about wrestling.
That's
most
true.
Most of the time we were sat watching three Royal Rumble matches in a row, hence your nicknames this week.
We watched 1998, 2001, then 2002.
2002 was a little bit disappointing.
Bit rubbish.
Yeah, 2001 was good.
98, I thought. I'd never seen 98 before. Really good.
Yeah.
Really good. It's been nice to hang out. Matt, we should actually mention you're actually here rather than on the internet.
I'm here in real life.
In the real life.
IRL.
Why are you down?
To come and hang out with you boys. Because I miss you.
Yeah.
Because I live in London, and it's not as sunny.
See the sea.
I went for a run this morning, and just going along the seafront, I was like, yeah, the sea. I can't swim in the sea. I can swim in like a dirty lake or a dirty river in London, but I can't swim in the sea.
I thought you just meant in general. Swim in the sea.
It's funny. Like every time I sort of look out my window and I can like see the sea, I'm like, wow, that looks so good. Oops, sorry, that's my phone.
Oh.
Unbelievable.
Oh, there it is again.
We were in such a good run there.
Silent. There we go.
So, nice to have you all together. There's plenty to talk about, because last week we didn't actually manage to get through all of the Summer NAMM news.
And Jay,
which is surprising, because there was virtually no new releases in Summer NAMM.
But there was quite... I mean, there's never as many as normal Winter
NAMM. I don't know why they do it. Well, I don't know why there is a thing for it. Like, because it's just... There are probably more releases... Just in a couple of months' time, then there are.
I think the thing as well with Frankfurt, it's kind of like there's people like announce stuff at NAMM. I think people kind of like tease stuff at Summer NAMM, and then it kind of actually they've got proper demos at Winter NAMM, and then come Frankfurt, everything's sort of ready to go.
I always wonder if it's a bit too much having the two. Like Orange had the problem of last time around when they sort of did the whole NAMM release for their Obi-Wan K amp. That then never got made anyway.
Yeah, never. There wasn't time to check that they were good to go, basically, before the show.
No, it wasn't that. It was one of the components was too expensive or dangerous.
Yeah,
or
I think it didn't pass spec. That's what I'm saying. Like, they didn't have time to actually submit it for being made before the show.
I think that's because you forget when these products are made, you have to send them off to like another company, and that company has to like put them all through all sorts of like crazy tests to make sure that when you're plugging your guitar pedal in that it doesn't catch on fire.
No, I'd like that. That'd be funny.
That's what I want. I want just that button. Just you the hit flame and a flamethrower just comes.
We come back to the wrestling again, just like Kane. Just little flamethrowers on the side of your pedal board.
That was one thing I was going to mention a few weeks ago. Did anyone go and see Mad Max? Because
wow, there's a bike rally going past.
Because then there's the whole bit with the guy.
Oh, nice boy. I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it.
You know, also, that guy is actually.
This goes out to like quite a lot of people. You don't want to spoil it. One of the biggest films.
You must have seen in the trailer. There's a guy playing the guitar.
That fella's a relatively famous Australian guitarist.
It's all recorded on Orange amps as well.
Is it
really?
They're everywhere, aren't they? Orange.
Just they are owning it at the moment. They're absolutely dominating like the festival market as well as just being present at you think Orange are sponsoring like Metal Hammer's Golden Gods, they're sponsoring Metal Hammer's Prog Awards, they're involved in all of that stuff. They're on the back lines for, they were just on the back line for 2000 Trees Festival.
Do they have a smartphone? More on that later. So what's everyone been up to this week apart from sitting around watching wrestling? Matt Knight.
I don't know, that was my main thing. Oh, I got my Boss ES8.
Oh yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah, yeah. How are you finding it? How are you getting on with it so far?
Yeah, well, all I've done is turn it on. So I haven't actually plugged any pedals into it because I only came last thing on Friday. So, and then I came straight down here after work on Saturday. I am so impressed by just the way it feels and looks and how the buttons work and just everything about it. I'm like, that is just, it's Boss going in like the ultimately best direction, I think.
Just annihilating the rest of the market, basically.
Yeah, 100%. Like, seeing how that looks, the DD500 is going to be so good if it follows the same sort of structure. But yeah. All the switches feel really nice. That, like, obviously, we've said before how solid Boss pedals are and how that their design really is kind of just the best on the market. And everyone's gone, oh, I can't believe they haven't put, like, their other foot switches on, like you might see on the ME80, but they feel so nice because they're multi-touch switches, so they can either be momentary or latching.
Okay.
They click in really nicely. The screen's nice and bright. Loads of sort of editing you can do on. So I haven't even read the manual, but just going through.
What?
Oh no, I did read the manual, but on my phone.
On the train down here.
I haven't actually. Yeah, let's see my bag.
That would not surprise me in any way.
As we said before, that's the only complaint that I've seen people say about it is that the manual isn't in depth enough. So maybe I should write.
I love that that's a complaint about.
Maybe I should write. I totally thought you were going to say the other thing. Oh, the manual is too small.
Yeah. Yeah. So you know how when companies put out a game, like someone else will do like a guide to it. Maybe you should do that.
Well, it's funny, no, because guides have got less and less. Do you remember like back in the day, you used to get like a massive map, and then there'd be like loads of cool stuff.
That's only because like games have got easier. Like talking about wrestling, I was thinking about it when we were watching it yesterday. When we were like playing Attitude or whatever, like doing the finishing moves was
really, really hard,
complicated, and it was different for each. Like each wrestler had a different. Whereas now it's just like. Just push square and hold left and it'll be fine.
Really brightly.
That's why I always preferred the WCW ones because the way you did the specials for everyone was always the same.
Right.
Whereas Attitude was made by Acclaim.
Acclaim,
who
yeah, that's right.
did, I think, Mortal Kombat maybe.
Because...
So the finishers were like Mortal Kombat
finishers.
Yeah,
and they were really complicated. Really complicated.
Yeah. Yeah, that, I didn't like those games. I'm all about the blocky WCW games.
Or just on like No Mercy on the 64 where you just push one of the yellow buttons and it's like, does it. Just does
yeah. Definitely. I've got them all except No Mercy. I need to get that.
I didn't really like No Mercy. It's all right.
WrestleMania 2000 is the one. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
But well, as you say, well, talking of button configurations, like the ES8, like...
You can do a scorpion.
I mean, seriously, I turned it on, pressed one, and like you know, finisher right there.
Come here,
get over here. Yeah. It seems like there's so much you can do with it. Like you can have a patch, you know, where one might turn on overdrive and delay, but you can set one of the buttons where you just step on it, it'll turn a chorus on, but it can be momentary. And I'm just really looking forward to kind of getting in and. Really programming it, especially with the MIDI control as well.
Is that your day tomorrow, basically?
That is my day tomorrow, yeah.
So you reckon definitely the most versatile?
I reckon
switch around there.
Yeah, it's once again, as we said, it's looking at the competition and going, no, there's some other companies out there doing a similar thing and loads of people are buying them and we could probably do a much better job.
I mean,
not to say those products are bad, but for them to go, well, we've got, compared to all of that, well, compared to like Strymon, for example, Boss have got what? nearly 50 years worth of...
Yeah, they should be able to make like a switcher
by looking at the market. That they've managed to put them at as well.
Well, yeah, I guess that they, because they can just make more and they've got a bit more kind of capital behind them, that they should be able to make a really good one, and they have. Yeah.
But it's not just that for me with the new stuff. Now, obviously, I wasn't here last week, but I did actually listen to last week's podcast.
Get off.
I did. One of the things that we didn't talk about was one of the things I really liked about the RV6 is they've addressed the fact that on the pedal, it's just called reverb.
Yeah.
It's not called digital reverb. And I think that put a lot of people off the RV5. Also, the fact that I didn't really like the sound of it.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's just these little changes which I think Boss are really sort of...
Yeah.
You know, they're really paying attention to the market now.
I wonder if they bought out a new delay, whether it would say digital delay on it.
Well, I mean, the DD500.
Well, yeah.
Does that just say delay on it?
Probably. I don't think digital reverb is a bit of a no-no at the moment. I don't think digital delay is. Digital delay has its merits.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because there's so many boutique reverb pedals out there that people are raving about that are all digital.
They're just a chip, yeah.
That people have, you know, programmed. But it's all about the way you market that product. And
whether it's cutting-edge technology or whether it's outdated technology, I mean, it's the same thing.
How often... do you see like true bypass like on a
yeah people have stopped saying now. That now
no I think it's still like still on loads like on all the TC electronics
but
stuff
a lot less than
yeah I suppose
before.
That marketing term has worn off now what is it boutique now I guess is the big thing
yeah I think so is the big
screen
the big
printed
thing.
Oh yes screen printed pedals
hand painted
yeah. Point to point
indeed. Jay Cross, what have you been up to?
I tell you the best thing that I found this week.
Royal Rumble 1998.
Royal Rumble. No. So a little bit sort of out there for me. The most exciting thing I found this week was a left-handed guitar. Ibanez have released, and I think it actually happened about a few months ago, but stock is only just sort of now currently available. My favourite Ibanez of the last couple years is the RG721 and they've just released them left-handed, which is wicked because it's like I think they're
is the RG721 then?
It's the two humbucker five-way selector switch that they do in the maple finish or the rosewood finish, and they're doing them left-handed now, which is wicked because it's like a mid-priced super strat that isn't in black.
Right.
You know, and it's just like that's...
Surely not.
I know.
What finish is it available?
I think you can get them in the maple finish and the rosewood finish. Oh. I've only seen the maple finish.
So they're scratch plateless RGs?
There's no scratch plate.
Yeah. They just look wicked. I really, really like them. The pickup configuration is really interesting. So it's the two humbuckers with a five-way switch. So in the bridge position, it's the bridge humbucker. Then in the fourth position, it's the inside coil. Uh-huh. So it's like coil split essentially. Then in the middle, it's the two inside coils.
Oh, sweet!
And then you've got the inside coil of the neck position, and then the neck pickup, neck humbucker. They're such a great guitar. They come with a proper like one of the sort of premium style hard cases, but it's a soft hard case.
Yeah.
And I just think it's like I hope that this is the case that companies start being like, okay, right. Left-handed guitars,
right?
Yeah, but left.
But Gibson haven't done anything.
Frustrated me so
since
much
since 2013. They've
not
done anything.
I know that they've done that.
It's bonkers.
That's
ridiculous. And Fender as well. Like, I mean, you can only really get in terms of the Fender sort of standard range. You can only really get standard Tellys and Mexican standard Tellys and Mexican standard Strats in a handful of finishes. You know, you can get black, white, late placid blue, candy apple red. And I think that's it. And then in the American standard, you can get black, sunburst, or white.
Oh, can you get white as well?
Yeah. But it's like, come on, guys. Like,
funnily enough, the Japanese market for Fender works very differently. And they have a much broader range of left-handed models.
You get everything, right, pretty much?
Yeah, everything. The guitarist in my band who's left-handed buys all his guitars... He buys them in Japan and has them imported because he has a much bigger selection of guitars to choose from. So he has two 60s Tellys, the bound Telecasters.
Where does he buy them from? from Japan, just from online
eBay
retailers.
We know a couple of people who live over there, and so I think he's got them to buy it, and then they sent him over. But it just opens up a whole new range of interesting stuff. I mean, his main telecaster that he uses is one of the old 80s Empress Wood tellies.
Oh, nice. I bet it doesn't weigh anything.
It doesn't weigh. It's almost neck heavy. Like, it's so lightweight. But yeah, they're completely wicked, and it's great that Japan sort of do that market. I mean, because he wanted an SG, he's had to buy a right-handed one and just have it converted. Mm. So it's got this awful, like, big cutout on the front, yeah, where once were controls, and now it's just had something stuck over.
You get that filled in.
Yeah, it has been. It's just had like a bit of scratch plate essentially put over it.
But that guitar is essentially rendered worthless now.
Yeah,
like, we'll
exactly.
never be able to sell it to anybody.
Well, that's it. And he has to do that with sort of anything. Yeah. If he wants anything essentially that's not Fender, the market becomes incredibly limited.
But even Fender is... There's just so... There's so few things about...
You can't go to a custom shop though. Like,
that's true.
We spoke the other week about... I've forgotten his name. Ben Howard, who played... When I was watching his Glastonbury set, and he had some great guitars. For a left-handed player,
yeah,
you sort of appreciate the stuff he had so much more, because he had some amazing pieces if he was right-handed. So as a left-handed, he must have been hunting a lifetime for him.
And I think it's just... like for the electric... it's weird because I tend to see that the acoustic market tends to be a little bit better suited. Like, Taylor do...
It's only one colour.
That's certainly true. But, like, Taylor do every model left-handed at no extra cost. Martin's selection is really good.
It's weird.
And then you get to Gibson, and again, there's sort of nothing.
they didn't
do
it.
At least with an acoustic, you can just
turn it over.
Back in the 70s, Gibson didn't do any left-handeds at all. As well, they've always been really adverse to doing them as a company. And Fripp, King Crimson,
Robert Fripp.
He was left-handed, but he really liked Les Pauls, so he retaught himself right-handed so he could play them, which is why he sits down to play it live in all their videos, because he really struggled with the adaption, and he found it difficult to balance the guitar.
So weird, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't do that. I'd just play a different guitar.
Yeah.
Done. Or just buy an older one.
Older? No, the mahogany.
Very good.
It does seem very strange that like in this day and age, there's hardly any left-handed models out there.
And 1 in 10 people.
I know. Probably more. And it's, you know, whenever you have this conversation, well, certainly whenever I have this conversation with anybody, like, you try and have a sort of serious discussion about it, and it immediately just goes, oh yeah, well, you know, they should learn to play the right way around, shouldn't they? And then that's sort of the end of the conversation, and it's like, no, you're not listening.
You're losing out on sales.
You're losing out on so many sales.
Yeah, it's funny because especially with places, you know, like cheaper guitars, everything's done on a CNC machine, so it's already pre-programmed.
You
literally have to just tell the machine to cut a left-handed shape out.
I mean, I can understand it in terms of like the economies of scale. Like, it will be cheaper just to punt out, you know, 100, say, you know, telly bodies. Than it would to do 90 telly bodies right-handed and then 10 left-handed. Yeah. But, I mean, it can't cost that much. And the amount of...
It's just more about goodwill, isn't it? I think the reason that there's more acoustics is because acoustics appeal to a broader market.
Yeah.
Like, there's a wider range of people, like wider demographics, I think, still buy acoustics than they do electric guitars, particularly on the lower end of things. Like,
yes.
You're more likely to go around someone's house who is not really a guitar nerd, who might have an acoustic guitar kicking around. They're probably going to have an acoustic rather than an electric.
Yeah.
So it makes sense for companies to go, okay, right, well, we offer all our cheaper acoustics in left-handed and right-handed, so that they've covered all of that kind of broad market. On the top end of things, I just think companies like Taylor just care a bit more.
Yeah.
They just really care about their users, you know, like with the warranties they offer and like views around the factory and using like... you know, looking after Ebony and things like that they've been doing. Like, they just seem like a really nice company who care. So that's probably why they do all their stuff left-handed. I think that's why.
Mm-hmm. There we go.
Joe Branton, what have you been up to?
I've been selling everything.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't remember if we spoke about it on the last one. I was going to sell everything. So I'm still sort of in that process. So I've got rid of my amps now.
Okay.
I'm buying...
Which were?
I had an Ashdown Mag 600 and...
I completely forgot that you had that.
Yeah, well, I don't really use it. It just sort of sits at home, and I had a 410 with that, so that's gone. And I've sold my Orange Terabase 500 head, so that's gone. I'm keeping hold of my 15-inch cab, my Orange 15. Now I'm buying a second Orange 15, and I'm buying a head, but I'm not going to talk about that head yet because it's a new NAM release. So I'll talk about when we get onto the NAM stuff. But yeah, I've been doing that, and I've sold. Well, I'm listing all of my basses except for my Nitro Finish 50s P bass, and I'm buying a jazz bass, but I don't know what to get. This is my big dilemma. I'm stuck.
Why don't you get a equivalent jazz to your 50s P bass? Why don't you just get a Mexican 60s jazz?
Yeah,
or 70s jazz. Do they still do that?
Yeah, no, the 60s one would be the one, wouldn't it? But because I wanted to get something really good. I've got a Geddy Lee at the moment.
The thing is,
I'm selling that.
The thing is, the P bass is your main bass.
So well, I can't have a main bass because I play in two tunings, so I have to have two main basses.
What's the other tuning you use? Just drop
D standard.
Oh, just not drop D. Right. Yeah.
But that's what I'm saying. Why don't you just get an equivalent bass? Because you know what the next step is. You'll get a custom shop jazz, and then you'll be like,
I need a custom shop P bass.
Yeah, this is the problem. But I definitely want one P and one jazz. I want one of each because they're the two best.
Get
a P ones.
Then get the
keep the Geddy Lee.
Well, yeah, I mean Geddy Lee's a great.
No,
Geddy Lee, best bass player ever.
Get the get like the 60s jazz bass, and then just get it refinished in Nitro.
Yeah, I could do that, or I have two options. I could get a custom shop jazz.
Yeah, which is the right answer.
At the moment, in the current 2015 catalogue, Fender are doing their 1960 Journeyman Light Relic jazz bass, which is the old stack pot controlled jazz bass. And they do that in like an aged white, or you can get it in sunburst. So either one is absolutely brilliant. But I would really like to get a deep U neck on a jazz bass. So I was thinking...
Deep U just sounds filthy. I just, when you said that, I was like, what?
Deep U.
I'd really like to get a deep U. yeah, I'd like a U neck.
Oh, thank you so much.
Yeah. Oh, for God's sake. or maybe a Sophie on a jazz bass. So I was thinking about that. I could go custom shop, or I could go to Limelight Guitars.
Don't do it.
Everyone's saying no, maybe they're right, but it's so much more affordable.
You know, I like how that sounded like that was happening in your head, not in the microphone.
It's funny you say that, because I was looking at Warmoth the other day, and I was like, I just really want to do something. I really want something weird that doesn't exist, and then you think I build it from Warmoth, but by the time you've got it here, you've spent probably £1,200
custom
and
shop.
You just think, well, that's might as well it. Just
it's about £900 to go to Limelight, so it's a lot cheaper than getting a custom shop. And
it also, again, comes back to the fact that you'll never be able to sell it.
No, they do get sold on Bass Chat and things like that.
For £300.
No, they go for like if they cost around £900 to buy, they go for around £700 on
Bass Chat. That doesn't make any sense.
At the moment, though,
yes, and I do appreciate as soon as people forget who Limelight are,
it'll be gone.
They'll bottom out.
Yeah. Yeah. And you'll get £300 for it.
Oh, that is true. It's more that I really want one, and I could afford the Limelight one when I sell the Geddy Lee.
and then you wouldn't have to sell all the other stuff, basically.
It's going to take longer. Oh, you are right. I'd need to go custom shop.
Yeah.
I was speaking to our friend Dan Grace, who has a really nice custom shop there. Do you know the spec on his telly?
Yeah, it's just a 52 with a... It's a
blonde 52.
An aged blonde 52 relic.
Light relic.
Light relic. In a, with a
single ply black.
Yeah, with a 52 neck. I think it's a 52 neck. It's amazing. It's one of the best tellies I've ever seen.
Yeah, it is a really good telly. And he obviously saved up and went Fender Custom Shop, yeah. and he was obviously telling me that I needed to not go for the imitation.
Yeah, you know, he's also he also got, you know what amp he bought as well?
He's got a Marshall Bluesbreaker.
No, he's got the smaller one, the 1974X.
Oh right,
and he's got it in white.
Is it white and gold?
Oh yeah. My. Oh, that's
it's very nice. So he's got the white bass, the white telly.
He said after 3 gigs it was.
Oh yeah, it's already
just
filthy.
The way he's just like the way he uses it, it's just like absolutely destroyed.
I was the tremolo's broken on it already. He was saying
oh, on the 974X.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But he said the good thing is he only uses it on the full setting, the fastest speed, and it will still do that.
Right, fine.
It just doesn't matter where you put the control.
It just
anymore.
Does that the whole time.
Which is fine, so it still works for him.
Right, cool.
I was actually talking to him. He was saying he'd love to come on Guitar Nerds, and I think he'd be a really good person for us to get on at some point because he has some awesome gear.
Yeah, we can do that. Get little Danny G in the booth.
But yes, that's pretty much my week. I've been losing sleep over what to buy. I genuinely have. It's really weird. It's like full on.
You know, you've gone down this route of like having loads of stuff that's not amazing.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying
buy
to
buy something amazing and just have one of them.
But the Limelight would be pretty amazing. They're very good. You're right, they're not Fender Custom Shop though, aren't they? And I think I got hold of Limelight and I asked them for some information on stuff, and I think the only thing I can specify is like a precision neck or a jazz neck. I think
I
think it ends there, and I think I would, as much as I'd love to pay for the Fender Custom Shop and get it next week if I ordered like one of the standard 2015 catalogue, I would really like a really deep neck on a jazz bass, which would require it being made. I think if I was going to shell out for a Custom Shop, I want it to be something a little different from the standard line.
Yeah.
Otherwise, just get a standard. The other thing is you could just get a second-hand American standard that would cost you like £700.
I don't like modern tuners, bridges, all that.
You could get an American vintage.
Yeah, I could get an American vintage. I've been really tempted by an American vintage. I think there are some really good American
vintages.
They've
come down in price as well, which is really good. Because they've basically addressed what we've been saying for the last, you know, however long, which is just they were a bit too much money for what they were.
I could essentially get an American vintage for the same price as a Limelight, but it's just it's almost when you're at the money for an American vintage, you're so close to the American Custom Shop.
Yeah.
Still. Mm. I mean, not that far, I guess, but not that close. It's still a grand
start. In the catalogue at the moment, there's a Daphne Blue 64.
Jazz, yeah.
Jazz with matching headstock.
Yeah, it looks great. Unfortunately, I've always been a Sonic Blue over Daphne Blue.
Right.
They do a Sonic Blue precision bass at the moment in the catalogue.
Yeah.
But the jazz bass colours at the moment aren't especially my cup of tea. But
get that Custom Shop. Just get it done.
Maybe, shall I just
get it done? What colour are you going to get? You're going to get Daphne Blue?
What, if I went Custom Shop?
Yeah.
No. No, I don't like Daphne
Blue. Sorry, you're going to get Sonic Blue, sorry.
No, I think, I'd have to get
Fiesta Red.
It's really tempting, but I couldn't get Fiesta Red because they do it in the Mexican Road Worn series.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'd feel the Road Worn series is so good that I feel like I paid $2,000 for something I could have paid $1,000 for. No, I think I'd probably go for like an aged white or probably sunburst because I just really like
sunburst. Get
I know it seems white. It does seem bad to go for like a really standard color when you're getting something like that. But if I was going for like a 60 jazz bass, which is what I get spec'd, if I could get like exactly like John Paul Jones's jazz bass, that's pretty desirable. That's pretty cool. But I don't know, maybe white. Shell Pink's cool, but I've seen one. Actually, Limelight made a Shell Pink 60 jazz recently, and I was like, oh, it just doesn't actually look like a 60 jazz because that colour didn't exist.
I still really want a Shell Pink guitar.
Yeah.
You haven't had one for a
Burgundy Mist, mate. That's the colour.
Yeah. I saw Football Etc. Last week, my friend's band, and she was playing the Shell Pink, the Shell Pink Custom Shop Bass 6.
Yeah, I wanted to see
it's
that.
Just like one of the best instruments in the entire world. Just one of the best things I've ever played.
Mm.
Maybe just get a Bass 6.
I've got one.
Oh, right, okay. He's not selling that.
No. What's the point? I've got the Squire one. Yeah. It's not worth a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's better to just.
And you won't be able to replicate that in anything else that you buy.
No, exactly.
Should we dive into some news?
Yes, let's.
Do you want to do the thing?
Oh, yeah. Nudes.
Very good. So, still going back to stuff from Summer, because we ran out of time last week. Do you want to talk about the thing that you want to talk about? Because I didn't actually see this come up.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
In fact, I've not even seen a photo. You've just told me about
it. So Joe made
it. Can't even guarantee that it exists. Go on then.
Makers of the probably the, you know, the best selling and the most necessary bass effect pedal of all time, Sansamp, who Tech 21, who made the Sansamp bass driver, and then later introduced the bass driver VT. Obviously, the bass driver was kind of known as being, hey, if you don't own an SVT 300, you should get one of these, because it will make everything sound really awesome like it, and a brilliant sort of DI box preamp, great for going into PAs, great for recording, great as a preamp or a drive pedal, really versatile. They introduced the VT, which was more like, it looked like it had an Ampeg grill on the front, and they introduced this new switch called the character switch, which if you read the manual takes you through as you go from one, I guess, round to 10. It takes you through the years of Ampeg, so
it's like a time machine.
Yeah, essentially. So like 1 to 4 is like Ampeg B15s, and then sort of like, you know, 5 to 7 would be sort of the 70s SVTs, and then you get the really modern sounding Ampegs at sort of the high end.
Breaks when you get to the top.
Just just breaks down because they're now made in China. But yeah, it sort of does that. They have taken that incredible pedal and they've put it in a 500 watt, extremely lightweight, tiny little head, and I hate lightweight Class D amp heads.
500 watt
because they're rubbish. But this sounds absolutely brilliant. I'm thinking, obviously Class D is never going to be as good as a Class sort of AB sort of thing. But if the Class D is all right, then this could be a wicked head. This could be an answer to kind of what Aguila are doing, I guess. It, that sort of thing. Mm. Like the first time we've seen lightweight bass heads that actually sound, that are actually good for rock and roll rather than like session jazz or funk.
You're out of order, because that first Mark bass head, the little Mark 1.
You mean the one that they don't make anymore, that you can't find anywhere?
Well, I can find one.
Yeah.
In your house.
In my house.
Yes, that
was great. But also, great. Not Class D.
Yeah, all right, that's why. But yes, I agree. They were brilliant. But the later Mark bass stuff, the TC stuff, the Galien Kruger stuff, all those other lightweight things are fine if you just want to be really clean, if you want something really transparent.
A bit polite.
I mean, you essentially have to buy a Sansamp if you want to use them in a louder band. This, hopefully, is the answer to that. So that is what I've decided to purchase. That's what I've sold my Orange head for. I was going to buy one of the new Obi-Wan 500s, but yeah, this Sansamp head has all the same switches that you get on the pedal in a head form. That sounds absolutely wicked.
Are you going to be selling your pedal now?
Yes, I'm going to sell the pedal as well, the VT.
Right, let me know.
I won't need it anymore.
I quite like them. Mm. Let me know.
They are good.
Yeah. Do you know how much it's going to be?
Yes, that's the other great part. £500, pretty much on the nose. I think they're £510.
Okay.
Around that.
That's not on the nose.
No, well, it was close.
Why would you go for that over the Orange then, if you've already got the Sansamp?
Well, I don't use the Sansamp anymore. I just bring it along as a DI. Just so what's coming out of the PA doesn't sound like it's coming off of the Terra bass head. I doubt the DI on Orange's Obi-Wan is any better.
It's not going to be any better or worse than the one on the Sansamp, like in terms of quality.
What do you mean?
Than the on the Sansamp head, like the Obi-Wan DI is not going to be a marked or improvement or any worse than the one that's on the Sansamp head.
Well, no, the Sansamp one, the Orange ones are terrible. That's the thing. Their DIs are awful. They're really, really hot and really hard to use.
I thought they worked on them for the OB series.
I mean, they might have done. I think you needed a 20 dB pad just to plug it in.
Yeah, they've always been really high output. Like on the Terra they are, but I think they put something new in the OB series.
Maybe they have. Yes, there is obviously...
That's what I think I'm going to get.
Really, the Obi-Wan. There is a great argument for the Obi-Wan. They're having like a two-channel, essentially, bass head is very, very desirable. And yes, it's not a clear cut. I was very torn between the two. Mm. I am simply going for the Sansamp because I think it offers pretty much the same thing with probably a little bit more versatility in tone control and I am less likely to break it, I think, than the orange. the orange is great, but because it's in that, it's very heavy for a rack mounted.
Yeah,
because
it's not
class
D, is it? It's like it's proper.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
It's proper solid state.
Exactly, which makes it quite weighty. And as soon as something's weighty but not big, because it's quite slim and stuff, I just fear knocks and
you're going to drop it. Basically,
it's going to get buggered on a tour, and I think something that I can fit into the front of a gig bag is probably less likely to get wrecked.
I'm curious to hear what this sounds like, because
this is true. I am buying this blind, which is
ready to pop the question. The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
I still don't think anything for me has beaten the sound of that first Mark bass, which is...
Well, even the Obi-Wan. Heard the Obi-Wan.
Yeah, I thought it was nice. I don't really like the distortion, because I don't like distortion on bass particularly. I like big, chunky bass sounds, not polite, but with that are still clean.
Well, that's it. I would never use the distortion, essentially, on the Orange.
See, I probably wouldn't not use it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Just have it on all the time.
Yeah. I do really like it. The Orange one does sound great. I will listen to the Sans amp first. I mean, I'm saying I'll get one on paper, but I will A/B them. But the Sans amp.
No, mate, this is a binding contract.
Right.
Oh. You've placed the order now.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, we do everything that you're saying, like Custom Shop Jazz, it's
the order's gone through.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
We're linked to your bank account. How do you think we pay for this?
You can't actually leave this room without giving us some money. So let's dive into more Summer NAMM news. I've just closed the email. Oh, Gibson first. Had a few new bits. The CM Les Paul. Matt Knight, what's the deal?
Bit of an oddity.
What does CM mean?
Do you know what? I was trying to find that out, and I don't know.
Back to wrestling. It's a CM Punk signature. Yeah.
It's
CM Paul,
because in a way it's like a stripped back Les Paul Junior. I say stripped back though, so it's like a satin wood finish, one pickup, volume tone.
It's like it's an LPJ, isn't it? Essentially,
but it's thinner body.
But it's a thinner body.
It's like
like the Les Paul.
Yes, but not as thin as that.
Yes, I think it is as thin as that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't think they were.
It's like the old, do you remember like Studio Smart Woods and stuff like that that were like
the, X, the ones
the
we
X
always talk about
series. Now, do you remember the SGX?
Good noise. That was just a regular SG body.
Oh, was
but
it?
With just one pickup. Okay. Yeah. No, the
but they did do a Les Paul Junior in that as well, in that series. They did a Les Paul X.
Did
as
they?
Well.
Okay.
LPX.
That might have had a slimmed down body. They did it on a few things like the Smart Woods. There's been other thinner Les Paul Studios.
It's
basically
like a Melody Maker, isn't it?
Melody Maker was the other one.
Oh,
yeah.
They were great. I really
they were.
Liked
they
the
were
Melody
awesome.
Makers.
And you know what? The thing I was just having a look here. The thing I really like about Gibson's website now is they've kind of really gone to town on like describing each one and breaking it down, so you can actually see like they actually show you all the different profiles they make, what all the different tops look like.
Yeah, the website is really brilliant, really in depth.
The only thing I'm not sure about, I think, it's the same neck and obviously got the G-Force, so it's the same
width. Has it got the G-Force?
It has.
Yeah,
it
has. Okay.
So $699, but G-Force, I think it'll probably be about $599.
Yeah, something like that.
But yeah, it's like a Melody Maker with the 61 humbucker in it. Should be a wicked guitar, satin finish.
What colours are available?
It just comes in that black.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What do they call it? They just call it satin ebony?
It's a bit of a metally looking guitar then they've sort of gone for.
Satin ebony. Colour code SE. Nice. But yeah, I mean, it looks like a cool guitar. Nice. I think it'll just be one of those cool Gibsons that they kind of bring out every now and then. You're like, oh, I wish I bought one of them.
I really wonder what CM stands for. Does it say anywhere on the site?
No, I'm having a look and I can't see. Not even the one person who's commented on it has said anything.
What's it mean?
No, it's... Yeah, they haven't mentioned why. Maybe it's the guy who designed it.
Is it something mahogany or something? Like
a raw rock monster.
There we go. Get your raw rock out. Another thing from NAMM. Jackson Ampworks Continuum. I don't know anything about Jackson Ampworks.
I am super excited about. A friend of mine's got a couple of Jackson Ampwork amplifiers and they are amazing. But the cool thing about the Continuum is that it is digitally controlling the analog features in their amplifier.
Okay.
So it's like a... It's not cheap. I think they're going to be about... In the UK, I think they're like... There's only a few Jackson amp dealers out there. It's going to be about £500.
Okay.
So it's quite a lot for effectively
a foot
pedal.
It's a foot controller. Right.
But it controls the analog tremolo and reverb in the amp. So obviously the amp's got a proper analog trem, which is... physically pulling and pushing power to the valves and a spring tank, but it's digitally controlling the tempo of the tremolo via the foot controller. Like, how mental is that?
Yeah, that's...
So they've only released a few details about it, and I think it's still like in the... I think it's pretty much finished, but not completely there.
I wonder. So is there a...
They've obviously already built something into the
amp. I was
going
to say.
And then they've obviously been working on the foot controller. Yeah.
I wonder what the connection is, even.
I have no idea. But this is the thing. It's digitally controlling, the analog features. It's going to be awesome. So subdivisions on the tremolo. So you know how, like, you love the sound of a Fender Deluxe Trem, but it's always just the site. You've just got the speed control.
Yeah.
This fact is going to give you tap tempo, subdivisions. You're able to control the reverb, the mix and everything from a foot controller. It's like the ultimate foot controller for a boutique amplifier.
Wicked. Such a weird thing to bring out.
I know, but how cool though. It's kind of one of those things. It's like definitely you're going to start paving the way for other people to do a similar thing. Because there was a talk out there for a while. There was an amp company who were building a power supply, and they'd worked out a way that they could build the power supply into their amplifiers, so you could power your pedal board from your amp.
And then they were
trying. It's a bit like we were talking a while ago about Source Audio bringing in this Neuro thing, and they were saying that we can retrofit it into other companies' pedals.
Yeah.
So it could be one of those things that people start modding amps that you can then fit that to it.
Yeah, definitely. One company that didn't do an official release at NAMM, but had something on the board that they were demoing their other pedals on, and people started saying, "What is this?" And eventually details leaked out. Wampler with the DB Plus. What's the deets, Matt?
So it's like a smaller Wampler Boost. It's a new, I suppose, make gooder a pedal that's arriving. But they did a few of them, like their DB pedals are like buffers as well, so you can leave them on all the time. You can turn the clean boost all the way down and it'll give you like just a really nice buffer, or you can turn it up and get a boost. But it's a mini pedal.
Yes.
Surprisingly.
Is that the first Wampler Mini?
Yeah.
It is. Right, okay.
But in the same case, well, maybe it's not the same case. It's the same size as the TC ones.
Yeah. It's like, it looks like a Ditto Looper, doesn't it, size-wise?
Yeah. But the great thing about their ones is that you can literally have it at the front of a pedal board, turn it to zero, and it will still just work as a super high quality buffer, or you can turn it up, start to add a little bit more tone, bring some sort of brightness and some body back to your pedal board after you've gone through like before you go through like a million pedals. And it's a nice small size. I think the thing is with those sort of pedals, it's the one thing that you want to leave on all the time, but you don't necessarily want to take up a huge space.
Yeah.
So
have they, because I know when it was on the board, I think it was a very early prototype or something, and they were kind of saying like, we actually don't know how many dB of boost this
is. That's right. I think it was so they've finished it, but they don't actually know how much it increases the actual volume level of. But it's funny really, because we say that, but you know, things like the Spark Booster, I think, are supposed to be what, 20 dB or 12 dB.
Yeah.
But you don't really, you don't go, oh, that's, I've definitely increased the audio by 7 dB there, isn't it?
It's a bit more abstract than that, I think.
Yeah, because
it?
It's not adding. It does, feels like it doesn't add that much volume. It's just, it's changing the character and the tone the more you turn it up.
Yeah. I mean, particularly if you're running into a load of other pedals, because then you're only ever going to be as loud as the output from the next pedal that you go into.
Yeah.
It's not like you put that in the front and then there's a 12 dB boost in volume. It's not that. It's 12 dB more of signal going into the next pedal, essentially. So, yeah, interesting little thing, and kind of weird that it didn't get an official release, and then suddenly it was just like there.
It's one of those cool products that I think, you know, no matter where you set the volume, it's going to do something different to your tone. You just find out where you want to leave it and just have it there, and away you go. But yeah, I mean, Wampler just continues to be one of those great brands in the last, really, they've only been around, what, probably 10-12 years. I remember when it was just him and he was building like pedal kits and talking about, oh, I've just made this like Tube Screamer clone.
Doing mods and stuff.
Yeah. Crazy.
Another little pedal fighting for your more gooder space at the front end of your pedal board. Some new Ibanez Talman in the Prestige line. I actually didn't write down the model numbers. I don't know whether you've looked these up already.
No, but didn't they... Because I saw that, you know, is that the same range that those RC ones came on that had like the three single coils that look like Jazz Masters?
They are those, but they're made in the Prestige line.
That's awesome.
So they announced the Talman bass.
Did they?
At the last NAMM.
Okay.
Yeah, which came out. Didn't hit the UK at first, and then I think it's had very limited impact, because essentially it was introduced as a budget line, and it is that sort of Jaguar Jazzmaster shape with a PJ configuration, and it was relatively cheap. So Ibanez sort of doing Fender there, and I don't think they have the not the right people are buying Ibanez for them to really compete. So I think it had limited impact.
A lot of the times there's so much stuff, especially with Ibanez, I think that only comes out to the Japanese market.
Yeah. Or you get some stuff in the States sometimes that just doesn't make it to Europe. So.
Yeah, but they look awesome. It's just, I think it's nice that they're going, like you say, going down. I mean, nice, they've made guitars for years that have always not necessarily been an RG or.
Well, I mean, the Talman model has been around since the mid '80s, because that's what the Noodle signature is based on. It's based on an Ibanez '80s Talman. Weirdly, well, I mean, it's not weird. It kind of makes sense that they've brought them back in now. It's because, obviously, the popularity of Jaguars and Jazzmasters.
Yeah.
I mean, they might be a little too late to the party on that. I think people have moved on already. But, it doesn't surprise me that they've brought that
strange
out.
Strange that
now.
It's all happening at once for Ibanez, though. They released sort of only, was it only 250 models of the old Ibanez Jazz Bass, which is called something like the Black Eagle.
Oh, yeah, the Chris Novoselic. Novoselic. He was known for using one of them.
That's right. Yeah. Exactly. But
that is a great bass.
It's a really interesting looking bass. Kind of
hole in the headstock.
Yeah, hole in the headstock below where the hole is sort of the line underneath where it says Ibanez. They've gone for the traditional Ibanez logo, which is great. Yeah.
Amazing.
Which is such a great logo. They have that logo on the Omar Rodriguez Lopez signature model stuff. But you just never see it on any of their standard lines, which I think is a real shame.
It's on some of the pedals, isn't it? It's on the reissue pedals and stuff like
is
that.
Is it?
Yeah.
Not on mine. Oh, right. Okay. It must
be
on
later. They don't like
reissues.
You very much.
Yeah. Fair enough. Yeah. But yeah.
Yeah, I'm quite happy to see those back, actually. I like when Ibanez do something a bit different. Matt, do you want to tell us about the Electro-Harmonix Silencer Noise Gate and the 22500 Dual Stereo Looper?
Yeah, so the noise gate is... Well,
it's a noise gate.
It's a noise gate.
I literally looked at the picture and went, yeah, all the controls are there you'd expect.
I think they've just kind of gone, oh, we don't really make a noise gate. And I mean, you know, we love Electro-Harmonix pedals, but they can be a tad...
A little noisy.
And I think they've just gone, oh, yeah, we should probably... I think, in a way, I think they're almost... There's a lot of, like we've said before, there's a lot of boutique companies out there doing something a bit sort of weird and unique, but it's kind of like, what new thing can we do? We've already got four phases.
Space drama issue.
Well, I mean, you know, I'll be driving that one.
That's what we didn't talk about in the beginning of this podcast, because I don't think last week you hadn't got the space drum.
No, but I said I bought one. Oh, I should have. If I'd only brought it with me, we could have done the intro with the space drum.
That would have been so
good. That would have been amazing. How are you finding it?
Awesome. It's amazing.
Does it go boo?
Yeah, and also it goes boo.
Right, good.
Yeah, you can set it to go the other way around.
Exactly, the two things.
Like that?
No, that's more of a horn.
Space horn.
But yeah, it's amazing. The 22500 is basically a cheaper. I say cheaper. We're just all admiring. Oh,
Jay's cat is attacking a pedal board that we're about to build. She seems to be licking the board. That's a bit weird. Anyway.
Yeah, it's basically, I think they've kind of gone, people love loopers and we don't really make a looper. And the 360 was all right. It was, you know, it had a few more features than the Ditto, but people were still buying the Boss one.
What about the.
Didn't they do another one, isn't it?
4,500? 5,000?
The 4,400. But the problem with that was they were like, oh, you've got to buy the extra foot controller. And I think they were really aiming for like a beatboxing market or like a home recording thing that wasn't really a home recording device because you had all the separate buttons for loops. This is basically an all-in-one looper that kind of rivals the Pigtronics Infinity Looper but for half the price.
Yeah, that's pretty mad, isn't it?
But it's got things like onboard pitch control and things like that as well. But the only thing that I find weird is they're still going down the route of using an SD card.
Yeah.
Are they?
Yeah.
Really?
Why do you think...
In a way, that's
why is that old school? That's not like the RC3 uses,
I just would have thought... No, it doesn't.
Yes, it is.
USB.
Has an SD in.
No, it doesn't.
Doesn't it?
No.
What do I put SD cards in? Which looper?
You put it in. You put them in your jam, man.
Yeah, jam man.
Get with the times, Grandad.
Oh, right. Is that not modern anymore?
I'm not completely against the SD card thing. Like, I always think like having the option of removable storage is kind of a good thing. Because it means if you fill up the space, the inbuilt space, swap
true.
It out for something.
But then the inbuilt space is so much now.
Of course.
I mean, I don't think I've met a single person who's ever come in and gone, I've used all 12 hours in my.
You never know.
I've recorded a 12-hour loop, and
is it Jurassic Park theme slowed down by 1,000?
I don't know when it starts or finishes.
But I come in, I just plug it in, I leave it for a bit, go and get a beer, come back, I just start playing.
Just looping field recordings.
But, you know, I think it's Electro-Harmonics just kind of... I mean, they churn out more pedals than any other company on the market at the moment. And, you know, and
they've got to give the engineers something to do. It's like, oh, we're a bit bored. We've done everything. Noise gate? Oh, yeah, all right, fine.
I mean, they've reissued so many things.
Space drum's got to be next.
I've got to tell you, though, like, I've been doing some sort of a little bit of research and... If I could really find the time, I'd love to write a book on Electro-Harmonics history in terms of what they've actually produced.
Yeah.
Because I was looking into the space drum, someone's like, oh yeah, I've got these sequences they did that basically they're just like an 8-step sequence that just fires a noise that then you can plug in something that takes a trigger in.
Yeah, I remember you saying, yeah.
But like all these crazy synths and like sequences and stuff they've done. And I was just like, yeah. They've done some amazing stuff. And
Kickstarter. I'm telling you, kickstart a book about Electro-Harmonics.
Then I can meet Mike Matthews.
Yeah, go and interview him.
Oh, he's amazing.
We'll get him on the podcast.
That would be amazing.
I love that he's still on the batteries.
Yeah.
Electro-Harmonics batteries, 9-volt batteries that they do
just
have
his
a picture
crazy face.
Of.
In fact, I saw a video with him at NAMM and he still carries around everywhere like a massive cigar.
Of course he does.
So good.
He looks like someone from like
he's
Royal
such
Rumble
a player.
1987.
Yeah, he looks like Ric Flair.
Yeah, he does look a bit like Ric Flair, actually. Gents, one last bit of news this week. And it's been quite big.
This is on the list. I didn't even see this is on the list. It's not a NAMM release. It doesn't count.
No, this isn't just NAMM releases. This is news. As you said, this is the news section. Marshall are releasing a phone. The Marshall London smartphone. So I first saw this not from any sort of the regular sources. I actually first saw this on like Engadget or something like that. Like,
did you?
Yeah, like something that is like a tech blog or something like that. So Marshall are working with a Swedish company whose name escapes me and I haven't written it down. And they're making a smartphone. Quite in terms of a phone and what's out there, it seems kind of underpowered, but their big selling point is that it's a music phone. Two headphone jacks, so you can share your music with a chum. And it plays FLAC files, which not a huge amount of phones do. FLAC being like lossless audio. So from that perspective... Oh, there's also an app that comes with it that will allow you to have like global EQ. So you can say you like your music a bit bassier, just bump up the bass a bit, or take out the bass if you don't like so much bass. So... And it looks like a little Marshall amp as well, is the other thing. So it's very much a phone that is not quite on par with other smartphones out there, but is designed specifically for playing music. Matt Knight, what are your thoughts?
I think what they've tried to do is, like you say, is make something specifically for people who love music, and they've put a couple of kind of... The one crazy feature I saw, that they've created their own DJ app.
Oh yeah, actually, there's a lot
that you can then... It will come through the speakers as the mix, but then you can listen to the two tracks, and it will come through either earbud, so that you can do live mixes on the DJ app, and it will come out the phone, which I thought was kind of crazy.
I assume the two headphone outs will work like that as well. You'll have a mix,
yeah,
a full mix out, and then your headphone out, so you can
two headphone outs, so you and your friend can listen to music without splitting the audio to downgrade the audio size. Although I was just reading, it's only got 16 gig of memory,
but again, it will take a micro SD. So you could easily get 128 gig micro SD and pop that in there.
I just wonder how much they've actually done in the design of the phone.
Well, I think not a huge amount. I think they've gone to the Swedish company. Who have you got the name there on those notes?
House Mafia.
It's not the Swedish House Mafia.
No.
Okay, they're working with a Swedish partner who I think has basically made the phone under license from Marshall, and with Marshall's input, saying this is what we'd like on a phone. Obviously, Marshall aren't geared up to manufacture a phone, but that's not what this is.
The thing is it's there's going to be somewhere there's going to be I bet in the history of the internet somewhere there'll be a podcast that discusses, like, is focused around building tires and stuff. And I bet you somewhere along the line
there'll be the episode
where they start complaining that Nokia are moving into phone design from tyre design.
Did Nokia do tyres?
Nokia started as a tyre company.
Really?
Yeah. So like this like huge shift in diversification, it can work.
Yeah.
You know, it's all well and good for us to be sitting here going, oh, this is ridiculous, this isn't going to work. You know, it's... These huge shifts, these huge diversifications that big companies roll with, like, you know, they do work sometimes, and I think it's quite interesting, and I think if it works, and I think if Marshall have done enough to make sure that this doesn't backfire on them, I think it can be very good for them, because, you know, how many times have we complained that Marshall have spent too much time resting on their laurels? How much, like, you know, relying on their history? Whereas this is something exciting. It's something different. You know, I've read as much as everybody else has, all the people on the internet complaining about it, saying, oh, this is ridiculous, this isn't going to work. I mean, just wait and see.
I'm up for that. Just wait and see how it is.
You know, I don't think it's going to compete with... It's not going to... I mean, I'm still going to buy the new iPhone. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's got to go for a different market. And I think that's what will happen. I think it will be a different type of person that buys this phone.
I like the fact the battery says, long live rock and roll.
Yeah.
Joe Branton's face.
Branton, I'm going to let you hop in a minute.
I'm not saying anything. I just hope they didn't make too many of them.
So my thoughts on it are, this is no different from Marshall making t-shirts and baseball caps.
Yeah.
Because they clearly aren't spending any resources on this. They've gone to this company and said, can you make us a phone that's got Marshall on it and it does these things that will appeal to music fans? And then they get them made and then they sell them, which is exactly what they're doing with t-shirts. It's not like they're taking people off making Blues Breakers to go and print some t-shirts. They're ringing up a company and going, yeah, we want some t-shirts that are in these sizes and these colours, and they say Marshall on them, and then someone makes them and then they sell them. That's exactly,
it's the brand, it's the strength of the brand,
yeah,
that's doing it. I mean, it's the same with the headphones.
Completely. And actually the headphones have been a massive success.
No, you're right, that is an excellent point. It is completely outsourced and it's not taking anything from Marshall. I think the reason that I got so irate about this is because I am waiting for Marshall to do what I want them to do and take back all that heritage that they have and put out some amazing stuff. They're a company that have the ability to still own it, and they're not at the moment, and I'm still waiting for them to do it. And instead of them doing it, then he releases a phone, and I think I was just disappointed that this big new release that they'd hyped up.
You want a new amp, basically.
I want them to start making their old amps again. I want them to realise that there's a reason that Dave Grohl doesn't play Marshall, he plays Marshall copies.
But what my problem with that argument is, what can Marshall do? What can Marshall do next? Where do Marshall go now? Apart from doing reissues, which is what they're doing, which everyone was like, okay, Marshall should be doing reissues. So they do some great reissues. You know, they do the Blues Breaker stuff. They're doing the JCM 800.
The 1974X. And
so they're doing all that. People...
The Jubilee, like, stuff.
Can they release now a JCM 2000, like a new version of that, that is going to sell any more than JVMs currently do? Because JVMs are still really popular. They're still true. Really big.
Yeah, that's it. I guess I want them to maybe do what Fender are doing. I mean, for example, the Blues Junior wasn't a reissue. It's something completely new, but it still holds on to the ideals that everyone associates with Fender. And every new release from Fender still manages to hold everything that someone who wants to play a Fender amp has, as Orange do. Every new release from Orange has all the attributes that people who play Orange want, and I don't feel that the new stuff that Marshall do is representing.
But they did that with the DSLs. You know, there's a DSL 15
and they did it before anyone else with Class 5.
The Class 5,
the Class 5 doesn't
amp.
Count because you can't gig it. I loved the Class 5. That's, I think, right. It sounds amazing.
Class 5,
Class 5's allowed.
Yeah, but only just. I think it's a stretch. Not comfortably.
I think if you want that Marshall sound, though, stick a mic in front of it.
Yeah.
I reckon
it was expensive for a 5-watt amp.
Into the Marshall London.
Yeah, but it's British made. They're all built in Milton Keynes. You know, it's like, that's part of, as part of the trade-off is, you know, you get, you know where it's being built. You can go there.
Yeah, yeah.
You can go there and see them building it. And it's, of course, it's going to be expensive. And, you know, it's on the flip side of things, we're also, I say we, you're also complaining that they're building cheap amps in China. You know, you've got to go one way or the other.
I know. And these are all good points. But on paper, the fact still remains that Marshall have lost their mantle.
Yes.
So,
but have they though, in the eyes of the general public, which is why there's clearly going to be some demand for this phone. Like, maybe within the guitar community and the more nerdy side of it, then yes, we're not seeing as much Marshall and there's not quite so much love for Marshall at the moment. But if you went to my dad, for example, who knows a bit about music but doesn't know that much about music, and went, can you name a amp brand? He would say Marshall.
Yeah, but that's nothing to do with what they're doing now.
No,
that's nothing to do with the company now.
True.
And that's what I'm saying. Orange have that as well, but Orange are still making stuff that people are like, oh yeah, that's brilliant.
Do you think that...
But what I'm saying is, what can Marshall do? What can they do for people to go, okay, that's brilliant?
I tell you what they can do. They can do what Boss have done, because this is what we were saying about Boss 2 years ago.
Come to us and we'll tell them exactly what to do.
But you know, this is what we were saying about Boss 2 years ago. It's like, oh, they're sort of resting on their laurels, they're not doing anything exciting, they're not doing this, they're not doing that. And then all of a sudden, Boss start doing exciting stuff.
Yeah,
they
so
start
look addressing. Look at the popular stuff. What if Marshall made an amazing solid state head? What if Marshall made a great 15-watt combo? What if they made
a great 15-watt combo? But I know what you mean. Like, I'm splitting hairs here. I agree. Like, Marshall have fallen back in the, like, the cheap stuff without a shadow of a doubt.
Oh yeah, I agree that
the MGs and stuff is just this sort of, you know, what if you if you've got the choice between a Marshall MG or a Blackstar ID Core, what are you going to go for? If you've got the choice between a Marshall MG and a Fender Mustang, you're probably still going to go with the Fender, like Microcube. You know, there's so many options that, that they've sort of fallen away from. But I really do think that they're starting to address the more expensive, you know, the more expensive side of things. Look at the 1974X. You know, that's a 22 watt head or something. You know,
yeah.
Are you going to buy that or are you going to buy a deluxe reverb? You know, I'd probably go with the 1974X.
Yeah.
You know, and then you've got the Jubilees that have come back. You know, I said the Jubilee is such a great head.
Well, they're doing what everyone said Marshall should be doing, which is doing a Jubilee reissue. Okay, done that.
Doing a Gigaball Bluesbreaker, yep, which is the 74X.
They're doing a small 15-watt combo, right. That's nice. They're doing
the,
I mean,
40 watts, the DSL-40s.
Maybe it's that the whole line needs thinning down. I mean, because you're right, those things are coming through, but I think they're still marred by the amount of that Marshall have in there.
I've got
catalog.
No idea how to use a JVM.
Yeah, I think that's an area that could maybe be addressed. And there's a lot of love for JVMs. Like, they still sell a lot, and people like them. People who want that are the sort of people that, you know, were years ago buying a dual rec and triple rec.
Loads
of sounds, or, you know,
four
more buttons than you know what to do with.
Yeah.
Those people are not buying Boogie, they're buying JVMs now.
Yeah.
Or like triamps and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like using kind of triamps.
Completely. They're buying, you know, JVMs. I think they're not doing a big rock and roll head.
Yeah.
Like the Jubilee is probably more expensive than a lot
the
of people.
J-Bally.
The Jubilee.
I like
Jay's signature Marshall head.
So maybe they could do that like they did with DSL 50s and 100s. Yeah. British made DSL 50s and 100s a little while ago. But do people necessarily want that? How many people do you know that turn up to gigs with full-size Marshall heads these days?
Mm, true, true.
But is,
I still
that,
think,
is that because of what else is out there for the same sort of price?
Well, maybe. Maybe.
You know, because it's like those the JCM. I mean, you still see JCM 800s and 900s.
Oh yeah, of course.
You know, and it's like if that was available in, you know, maybe they do just need to take a bit of a risk and do something that change the chassis.
Possibly, but they've done that as well. They did a Class 5 head for a while. You know.
Yeah.
They're kind of doing everything right. Apart, I mean, they need to sort out the budget things, I think.
And the marketing and...
Well, and yeah, the telling people about the stuff that they do. But, you know...
Well, their biggest launch has been the phone.
Yeah, but and that is massive. And that will... They'll sell a lot of phones.
They really will.
They'll sell a lot of phones.
I'll buy one.
You definitely won't buy one. They're going to sell a lot of phones. Anyway, let's wrap this up. We've gone way longer than we normally do. Thanks so much for listening, and thanks in particular to our Patreon backers. Do you want to read them out?
Yes.
Good. Should we do a little musical?
Yes. Give me some backing.
We should do. We should do a wrestling one.
Dun, 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 I think that's Kurt Angle.
That's
the worst one.
Should it have lyrics? Oh yeah.
Will Clare, Chris Wilson, Scott, Matt Pine, Fletcher, Phil Thompson,
if you too want your name read out in a Gorilla Monsoon fashion to the Hulk Hogan theme tune, you can head over to Patreon, patreon.com/guitar nerds. For as little as $5 a month, you can get an extra half an hour every week of the Guitar Nerds podcast. I think it's $10 a month gets your name read out in that fashion.
You think?
It is $10 a month. this week, what are we going to be talking about on the Patreon episode?
Just before we do that, as an aside, Moog, who's one of the people who... is one of the patrons. I had a little chat with him this week.
Cool.
We're going to be doing some work on his guitar. Getting his Epiphone
Les
Paul
standard.
Does
he prefer Moog or Moog?
I've always said Moog. I hope it's Moog.
Because I saw a good video of Dr. Robert Moog.
Bob Moog.
Bob Moog. And he actually talked about the name, because I think it's like German, and in Germany
Moog.
They pronounce it. Yeah. But
Moog.
Then in America they say
Moog. I think the company.
They say Moog, and we say Moog.
Yeah, I think the company's become Moog, hasn't it? But anyway, we're sorting out Moog's guitar.
His guitar.
We're like doing some nerdy stuff with it. It's gonna be good.
So on this week's Patreon, we're going to be talking about Matt's top 6 tips for building a pedal board.
Top 5, I think. I think we narrowed it to 5.
Okay, yeah. We're going to go for 5. And we'll probably talk about other stuff as well. We'll talk a bit more about Marshall and maybe answer some questions that were sent in our Facebook group, facebook.com/guitar nerds forum. Do join us over there. We talk more about this stuff. We'll be posting up videos.
We're making a new video later today.
Well, because we're all together, we're going to be filming Matt building a pedal board, which should be quite fun. That will go up in the Facebook group and on the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/guitar nerds videos. We do a whole bunch of other stuff, more news and stuff going up on the site guitarnerds.net, which is where you can find all the episodes of this podcast, as well as on iTunes, and you find all the Patreon episodes on patreon.com/guitar nerds. If you want to follow us on the intrawebs, at Guitar Nerds on Twitter, you can follow me @Mark_Random. Matt, where can people find you?
You can follow me on Twitter at Munderscore.
Monday Night Raw.
Cone Stowed. You can follow me at Matt_90. I really had to think about that.
Yeah. Jay Cross.
You can find me on Twitter @JAYBN1.
Joe Branton.
You can find me on Twitter @Yosef_900.
Thanks for listening this week. Do join us over on the Patreon episode, patreon.com/guitar nerds.
Thanks.
Bye.
Cheers.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.